The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. So much to get to on today's program. The mail bomber was caught on Friday. That happened after our final broadcast for the week. And then, of course, the following day, you had this mass shooting at a synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And we'll have something to say about that here in a moment, too. And of course, just the ongoing, ever-intensifying media war against President Trump. That and more to get to. Also, if you were listening last week, you're curious, I know, about the follow-up Bible study. We'll save that for the end of the show, but some good feedback coming from Brad McDonald following that follow-up campaign, that study down in London just last night. We'll update you on that later on in the show as well. But first, if you're just waking up in the United States, this is probably news to you. In fact, through the day, through the news cycle of today in the U.S. for sure. You may not even hear about this, but German Chancellor Angela Merkel announced today that she will soon step down as leader of Germany's Christian Democratic Union, and we'll get into the details of what this actually means in a moment. But in essence, she's starting her long exit. She's heading for the door, what has been a long exit, I guess I should say. She's on the way out. Deutsche Welle tweeted out this morning, as political bombshells go, this is a biggie. If Angela Merkel is voluntarily relinquishing her party's chair, it means her days as chancellor are almost certainly numbered. Deutsche Welle had an article together with this tweet. It said, the race is now on to replace Merkel, not only as the leader of the CDU, but also possibly as chancellor. And so now the race is on. And of course, if you follow this program, or if you've read our articles at thetrumpet.com, or listened to my father over the years, you know this is significant. A change in government leadership in Germany? We know all about how fractured and divided the political parties in Germany have been these past several years. But you don't have to go. You don't even have to go back a few years to a time when Chancellor Merkel was wildly popular before that refugee crisis. And then you think about just how fast and dramatic the changes have been in the last several years, just the last 3 or 4 years. Ms. Merkel has been the leader of the CDU since the year 2000. 18 years. And now the CDU is going to be electing a new leader in December? I mean, previously, it was assumed that she, as shaky as her government has been, it was just assumed that she would stand in again and win and continue to be the party leader. But today, just a little while ago, in fact, I think she's holding a press conference even as we speak. Today, she announces that she's not going to seek another lead role over the party or election this December. So coming December, we'll have a new leader for the CDU. Now, what she's also announced is that she'd like to remain on as chancellor for a little while longer. And this is this would be a pretty unusual arrangement if that's what happened. Certainly not something that would hold for very long. In fact, in the past, Merkel herself has said that the chancellor should be the leader of the largest party in government. So if that wasn't the case following December, it would be unusual, and she'd need the support of her party to fulfill that kind of a role or arrangement, to stay on as chancellor but not lead the majority party, even if she is allowed to do this for a short time or for however long. It's undoubtedly going to be just for long enough for her to pass over or hand over power to a successor. And that could be significant, too, when you think about the prophecies and how that the Daniel 8 man will come on the scene. He comes in, remember, through flatteries. It's not by your typical vote. He works his way in through flatteries, as it says there in Daniel 8, and, well, Daniel 11, I guess, to be more specific. I'll come to those verses in just a second. That's Daniel 11 and verse 21. In any event, Ms. Merkel's spokesman, he announced just a few minutes ago that, as I say, she wants to continue on as chancellor for another few years and then step down. And as I say, if she's allowed to do that, if the party allows for that, that's, I guess, what remains to be seen. But all of this comes, as you well know, if you've been listening to this show, all of this comes after her party has just been getting pummeled at the polls. One election setback after another. A few weeks ago, it was the vote in Bavaria. Her sister party losing about 10% of the vote. And then just yesterday in Hesse, her party's governed there for 19 years. I mean, this is the location of Germany's financial hub in and around Frankfurt. And yesterday she gets hit again, 10%, a 10% setback. And that's what finally then led to her statement today. These election results just in recent weeks, it really does point to not only her party, her sister party in Bavaria, the SPD party is taking a hit. That's the coalition partner. And so more and more voters in Germany, they're shifting to the extreme parties, right and left. The far right and the far left. This is how Bloomberg reported the news earlier today, clip 13.
One thing they do say about politics is that all political careers end in failure. And it's very clear that we are ending towards the kind of twilight of Merkel's career as German Chancellor. Let's not forget that this is her fourth term, you know, 12 years in office. And it was always clear after that drubbing she got at the national election last year in 2017 that she was on the demise. And this is only being now, this is being, the same message is being clear through the regional elections we saw in Bavaria, now also in Hesse. And it's not only the rise of the far right that's undermining Merkel, it's also the rise of the Greens. So what we're seeing is the center, the traditional parties, the SPD and Merkel's CDU, are failing badly at the ballot box, and the German political sphere, like many other European countries, is becoming more and more splintered.
Just like what we see all over the world, division, a huge amount of dissatisfaction in Germany right now. And if you're in America, as I said, you're not going to hear anything about this today because you have the media there. Well, in some ways, they're highlighting the division in the United States, and it is deeply divided. But they're also inciting division and hatred and violence. The media. And totally... just turning a blind eye to any of these other significant stories. Well, they probably don't even think it's significant. But she's been there since the year 2000. And now no one in Germany really knows what's going to happen next. And anyone with a little bit of an understanding of history, given all of the turmoil and the troubles in the world today, you would think more people would be sitting up and taking note. What happens? What happens when Germany is discontented and leaderless? What have they historically done? 2 years ago, my father, in an article, watched Germany. He warned of what's coming and how that this European refugee crisis, it was going to shake Europe at its foundations, he said. And he urged us to closely watch what's happening, well, all across Europe, but in Germany especially. He wrote, that nation is going through some dramatic changes that are about to reshape the country and the whole of Europe. Yet most of the world is asleep to how serious these changes are. You look at the news cycle today. and it's Donald Trump. All things Donald Trump. Division and strife. Hatred. Hatred for Donald Trump. He's public enemy number one. Most of the world, he says, is asleep to how serious these changes are. Well, my father goes on to talk about, or he did, this was in an article 2 years ago. He talked about just how weak her government was, Angela Merkel's. And as I say, you go back to 2014 and 2015, I mean, she was the most popular politician in the world. Remember that? And now she's on the way out. She says, well, I mean, I want to still be chancellor for a little while longer, perhaps till 2021. But I'll go ahead and step down as the leader of my party. She's on the way out. She's heading for the exit. My father wrote, this development will be of acute interest to longtime trumpet readers. We have forecast the rise of a much stronger leader in Germany for many years. It appears we're about to see this ruler come into office. And he says when this happens, it's going to change the entire course of European history and shake the nations. It's going to shake the nations of this world. Merkel is on the way out. And the Daniel Ape Man. The next one could very well be the Daniel Ape Man. My father said, the Germans are restless and they want somebody to speak out. And so that's why we've been keeping our eye on Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg. Watch his every move as this political crisis unfolds. He's already speaking out more boldly than ever before. Here again, maybe she manages to hold on to power for a little bit longer. Whenever the time is right, though, for this prophecy to be fulfilled. What prophecy is that? Daniel 11:21, as I said earlier, he's going to come in by flatteries. Or, as my father has explained, the meaning there is slipperiness. That's how that he's going to come in. He's going to rise to power with flatteries and deceit. He's going to be canny and shrewd. Very popular. And so we keep our eyes on these prophecies. Not just how that he comes in, but what he's going to do when he gets in there. Daniel 8 explains that. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. See, he's going to have some help, some assistance spiritually. And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. This is talking about what leads right into and is in the midst of the prophesied great tribulation. We're heading into some dark times. This world is heading into some dark times. There's some good news beyond those dark days that are ahead. But still, these are sobering developments. My father said in that article, the refugee crisis and the turmoil within Germany's two conservative parties, the CSU and the CDU, provide probably one of the greatest opportunities ever for a new leader to come in into power by flatteries. All of this points to these prophecies being fulfilled very soon. With Angela Merkel now on the way out, this is the perfect time for someone to come into power by flatteries. Well, that article that we referred to, Watch Germany, that's from a couple years ago. I failed to get the date. We're running on a shorter period of preparation this week. The program here in the UK is an hour earlier. For those of you that might have missed it in Europe, hopefully you can get the podcast later, but everything will return to normal. for us on this side of the pond next week. That article from a couple weeks ago, years ago, sorry, Watch Germany. And then the one I'm thinking of more recently, this one in the latest Trumpet, the Holy Roman Empire goes public big time. I mean, the empire's there. Charlemagne's on display. You've got Kurtz and others in Europe calling for the spirit of Charlemagne to return. This is what so many of them want. And they're going to get it. They're going to get their Charlemagne. But it's not going to lead this world to peace. Understand what it means for our nations. Read the 14th chapter, those last few chapters of the United States and Britain in prophecy. Some sobering, sobering prophecies, to be sure. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll turn our sights on America and all that happened over the weekend with the shooting and that mail bomber being captured on Friday, the intensifying division and hatred that we see, and then, of course, the media's role in really inciting so much division and violence. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe. And it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
It is true that, if you create a state of siege, there are people who are imbalanced in our society, and you can see them on the fringes of our social media, like this man, like that guy who sent all those bombs out to all those public officials who are activated by that kind of rhetoric.
So that's David Axelrod, the big Obama supporter, part of Obama's administration, saying there that if you create a siege, that's the way he describes it, then people who are imbalanced, they're going to come out with bombs. If they commit acts of violence in this climate, that you're hearing a lot about the climate, and of course the cause, which would be Donald Trump. The mail bomber, he loves President Trump, so obviously that's President Trump's fault, what he did last week. The synagogue shooter, he hates President Trump. And, well, that's obviously President Trump's fault. Because the climate is President Trump's climate. And so it's not just the mail bomber, and they weren't even bombs that went off, but that's what he's labeled as. So it's not just the mail bomber, it's also the synagogue shooter. It's astounding to me, the statements that were made all across the major media yesterday and the day before and Friday. all weekend long, another mass shooting in the United States. This is one of just a long line of mass shootings that have gone on over the course of several presidencies, in particular since Bill Clinton's on to today. A whole generation of violence, of mental derangement, of demon-possessed killers. And people want to blame this latest chapter on a president who's been in there less than 2 years, as if all the history before him is just blotted out. The Wall Street Journal says this shooting leaves a sense of shock in peaceful Pittsburgh. Well, it's shaken the nation, not just Pennsylvania, not just Pittsburgh. This is a country on edge, the United States. It says here in the journal, bordered by two large parks, the Squirrel Hill neighborhood has long been the heart of the city's Jewish population. It has about a dozen synagogues, and Orthodox families and others can be seen on Saturdays walking to services on its leafy streets. And then talks about some of the other religions or denominations, Christian denominations, that are in the same neighborhood. Since Saturday's mass shooting, people have gathered at the corner instead to try to process the horror that took the lives of 11 people a few blocks away. Quote some of the people there at the scene. "I'm horrified and devastated," one says. Many people, including students from other parts of the world who have made Squirrel Hill their temporary home, said they never expected a mass shooting here. It's the same story, just a different chapter. It's played out far too often in what's becoming a violent nation, bitterly divided. But this reaction in the media to President Trump, and not just from, you know, some far left commentator, it's coming from the Obama people. It's coming from congressmen and women. It's coming from not just the commentators on the panels, but it's coming from the moderators, the newsmen. This is an example here. This is Representative Adam Schiff, clip number 15.
The broader issue is what kind of climate are we creating in the country? This country is filled with amazing, beautiful, wonderful people who came here, many of them attracted by the idea this was a land of opportunity, no matter your religion, your ethnic origin, your color. That idea is being tested by those who are preaching hatred and division, and we have to overcome that. And I think the president has a pivotal role there. No one sets the tone more than the president of the United States. And the tone that he sets is one of division, often one of hatred, sometimes one of incitement of violence against journalists. And there's no escaping our collective responsibility, but there's no escaping the tone that he sets for the country. The Constitution contemplates a president that tries to make us a more perfect union. And the president has his own constitution in here that doesn't allow him to do that. And that's not going to change.
He has his own constitution, this congressman says. He operates according to his own laws. He incites violence. He sets the tone of division and often hatred. It's as if all that happened before January of 2017 didn't happen. And the president tweeted as much yesterday, blaming him for division and hatred that's been going on for so many years. You didn't hear them coming forward when that Republican was shot a year ago by the Bernie Sanders supporter. You certainly didn't hear a wall-to-wall coverage on the media blaming Bernie Sanders Or what about the Las Vegas shooting just last year? Shooting up all of those country music fans, many of them Trump supporters. Mass casualties. And I don't recall the media being that interested in the shooter or his background. In fact, you still don't even know much about the background of that particular shooter. But here they are rushing, and as I say, not just congressmen, not just commentators. Here are the moderators. This is Chuck Todd. He's I think he's at CBS or one of the big networks. This is what he said yesterday, clip 16.
We have a problem, and we have a president who doesn't seem to believe he has a role to play in dealing with it.
He's out of touch. He doesn't have a role. He's not fixing the problem. Here's George Stephanopoulos at ABC, clip 19. Oh, I didn't get that to you. This is him yesterday basically saying that it's the fourth mass shooting in a year, and that we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, you look at all of the hatred and the division, and right at the center of it, he said, is an unapologetic president who's out of touch. He's not conforming to the traditional norms of civility. That's George Stephanopoulos. You just heard Chuck Todd. Jennifer Rubin, she was on, I believe this is CNN, just yesterday. She said this, clip 17.
Nationalism goes hand in hand with anti-Semitism. The entire idea of anti-Semitism is to put Jews outside the body politic, outside the definition of us. And that's what Donald Trump does. That's his theme. That's what his party is now committed to doing. That comes back in every speech now he gives. That comes back in the hysteria over immigration, which is actually at all-time lows. It comes from this demonization of cities, which were traditionally associated with Jews, that they're urban, crime-filled pits of degradation and of wrongdoing and evil and all and cosmopolitanness, all of that is foreign. All of that is alien. And that's the origin of anti-Semitism.
So, and President Trump, because he's saying America first, or I'm a nationalist, that goes hand in hand with anti-Semitism. His daughter, Jared Kushner, and his daughter are practicing Jews, devout Jews. And now he's responsible not just for the mail bomber. He's responsible for the synagogue being shot up. When have you seen this kind of just obsessed, deranged rush to judgment for the president? When did they ever go after his predecessor? How many shootings were there? And not just shootings in schools and things of that nature, but shootings of policemen. Dallas, for example, all of that hatred coming from his administration, I'm talking about Barack Obama, and the policemen that were being shot almost routinely, the most horrific being that shooting in Dallas, 7-8 officers gunned down. Was that shooter an Obama supporter? What about his relationships? What about his ties? You see where this is leading. Representative Turner, this is another congresswoman. Listen to what she said about this synagogue shooting. This is clip 18.
We're not looking for perfection, but we are looking for decency. And that is what this president fails to exhibit time and time again. He'll say one thing when it's written for him all nice and neat by his staff, but then when he gets into these rallies, his true nature comes out. So he does have to take some responsibility for the type of racist bioclimate that we find ourselves in, which, Jake, is not new. This is, and you hear me say this all the time, this is in the DNA of America. So I'm surprised that people are surprised. What is happening is that what is in our root as a country is bubbling up now.
This is in our roots. This is in our DNA. This is right out of the Antiochus playbook. We're racist through and through. It's an institutional racism problem. We shouldn't be surprised by this. And now you've got the racist in chief. And so it's going to get worse and worse. You probably didn't hear anything about this meeting that President Trump had on Friday with the Young Black Leadership Conference or gathering. I guess it was called a summit. But I didn't get the facts and figures on the room, what room of the White House it was held in. But it was, judging by the footage, I mean, it was crowded. And it was boisterous. President Trump meeting in front of young black leaders in the White House. This is how that meeting began, clip number one.
They call this, as you know, this is Young Black Leadership, and it's the summit. And to have you here is truly my privilege. And we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to talk. We're going to meet. But
those are cheers coming from the Young Black Leadership meeting in the White House on Friday. All last week, the president was calling for calm, saying that we need to catch the mail bomber, that the country needs to come together. He was saying a lot of the things you would expect a president to say following a bomb scare. But as I said last week, I mean, none of it was good enough. Schumer and Pelosi came out with a joint statement saying those words ring hollow. I mean, look, he's the cause. And so even the apology, even the statement of coming together as a unifier, saying that we should come together, even that was rejected. And then this, and nobody covers it. Total, absolute and total silence. Because listen, this is all that you need to know. This is the conventional wisdom. He's a racist, he hates blacks, he hates Jews, and so on and so forth. And you heard it all weekend long. I mean, that statement from Jennifer Rubin, it's unbelievable, the things that are being said. Just offhanded remarks. Here he is coming before the Young Black Leadership, and you hear them cheering. They love him. They love the fact, okay, so more of them are conservative, but they look at the statistics. That's what he said when he was campaigning a couple years ago. Look, you've been betrayed. You've been forgotten. This administration before mine and others before that, they've neglected the black communities. What do you have to lose? Well, some of them voted for him, and more are going to vote for him, and this is what absolutely terrifies the Democrats, because they have to get 100% of the black vote, or I guess not 100, but 90-some percent of the black vote if they're going to win elections. And so they go after this president, and they go after any blacks that would dare to think for themselves. So this is what the president said. This is in the same meeting from Friday, talking about how that Americans should unify and should come together in peace and love, as he said, before these young black leaders. This is clip two.
But a bottom line is that Americans must unify. And we must show the world that we are united together in peace and love and harmony as fellow American citizens.
Said that repeatedly last week. But what the media hates is that at the same time, he said the media needs to stop with the hate speech. They need to stop comparing me to Adolf Hitler. I went through some of that with you last week. This is what he said at the Wisconsin rally last week, clip three.
No one should carelessly compare political opponents to historical villains, which is done often, it's done all the time. Gotta stop. We should not mob people in public spaces or destroy public property. There is one way to settle our disagreements. It's called peacefully at the ballot box. That's what we want.
Peacefully solve those problems. not with violence. But no one should carelessly compare political opponents to villains of history, Hitler, Stalin, and the like. And it's done often, as he said there, and he's right. You heard it last week. It's done often. It's done repeatedly. It was done again all weekend. And isn't it amazing that even as they're going on and on about this, he assembles this group of young black leaders in the White House, and nothing, you hear nothing about it. This is what he said to those young black leaders, clip four.
The worst tendency in our politics is to tell people what they should believe based on their race or religion or color or group. Right? Such a setback. We reject the politics of division, and we embrace the unity of being American. Really great. We are one people, one family, and we are one nation saluting one great American flag.
That's a clip from the Young Black Leadership Summit on Friday in the White House. One America, one American flag. One family, he said. We reject the politics of division. He went on to say this, clip five.
He said, I mean, I heard this one a couple of weeks ago. I said, give me a break. They said, America first. That could be racist. I said, racist? Racist? Why is that racist? Here we are. I think, does everybody in this room agree? You're living in America. America first, right? That is really beautiful. This is a beautiful meeting, I have to be honest with you.
Well, it is refreshing. I mean, I don't know if I would say beautiful. I know you wouldn't hear clips of that on CNN. They are actively working to incite more division and, yes, more violence. And they want to bring down the president of the United States. And so what you just heard there, ignored. Here's a group of young black leaders chanting USA as the president talks about America first. Notice further, he said this, clip six.
In the past, the black community has been promised everything from the Democrats by the Democrats, and they've gotten nothing. They've gotten nothing. And there's been no incentive.
No incentive. And they've gotten nothing, really. And here comes a president, and within 2 years, you see black unemployment percentages. I mean, they're falling. More young blacks getting into jobs like never before, or certainly not like anything we've seen in the last several decades. And the president has trumpeted this message. The media won't. And so he's there constantly with his speeches talking about how many blacks now have jobs and how many are getting off of food stamps. And here's a group of young black leaders. And again, this is a terrifying thing to Democratic observers. But here they are assembling in the White House, cheering him on. Cheering him on. I mean, they've been promised. They've been given all these promises by Democrats, and none of them have followed through. They haven't gotten anything from it. One last state, well, I guess that's the last that we have, but I thought it was a pretty amazing contrast when you take what President Trump was saying in front of a black audience on Friday at the White House with what President Obama was saying at a campaign rally in Milwaukee. This was the one at the high school on Friday, and I'm sure quite a few of the people attending this rally are black, coming from Milwaukee, the city in Wisconsin. And this is what former President Obama, had to say in Milwaukee on Friday, the same day of these other clips that you heard from the White House. This is clip 8.
The powerful and the privileged fight hard to keep what they got. And they will try to make you angry and cynical and distracted. And they'll try to exploit our history of racial division or ethnic division or religious division. They'll try to pit us against one another.
And so there's President Obama talking about the divisions, the opponents. Of course, he's referring to the opponents on the other side of the aisle, the powerful and the privileged. It's not exactly clear who he means by that. But they're trying to make you angry, to make you cynical and distracted. In fact, it's the Democrats who are trying to make people angry, to make them unhappy, to make them feel discontented and unsatisfied, exploiting racial divisions, ethnic division. It's pretty revealing, isn't it? Just to compare, I mean, look at even the tone of the two. And then just the hatred aimed at the current president as he's there trying to bring the nation together. Now he's confronted a lot of resistance, and he's said it in some ways that have been at times shocking. But here we are in the midst of some very disturbing events last week, and particularly on Saturday. And in listening to the coverage, well, across the board, you know that it's the sins of our people. I'll come to it in just a second. But it is interesting just looking at the contrast here. I skipped over clip 7. Listen to what Barack Obama said on Friday, clip 7.
Making this country better has never been easy. It's always been a fight. For every 2 steps of progressive change forward, a lot of times we take 1 step back in conservative retrenchment. That's what happens. That's been the pattern. Every time we pull ourselves closer to our founding ideals, that all of us are created equal and endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, whenever we start moving in that direction, the status quo pushes back.
He cites the Declaration of Independence, the freedoms enshrined in that document, and then goes on to talk about how many big government programs are taking a setback now because of a conservative administration or a more conservative one. We've got to advance this progressive agenda. He wraps himself in the document, the founding document, the Declaration of Independence, but it's a Marxist agenda through and through. And when you want to talk about disturbing connections or relations, look at the friends, look at the ones he associated with, look at the ones he spent time with in college, look at the ones he draws attention to in his own books. And the media, they were never disturbed by those connections. Never disturbed by Reverend Wright or Khalidi or Bill Ayers. They had no problem with those kinds of connections. They had no problem with the things that he said in his autobiography about his uncle, about who he hung out with in college, and so on. But now, let me just play a couple more clips. This is from President Obama's campaign rally in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on Friday. Clip 9.
They'll tell you that, oh no, everything'd be okay if it just weren't for those folks who don't look like you.
There he is, stirring up again. Racism. That's the DNA that congresswoman talked about. It's in their DNA, particularly in the Republican DNA. Clip 10.
They'll say whatever it takes to keep their stuff, to maintain their privileges, even if it's not fair. Especially when it's not fair. They like it that way.
It's not fair. You've been cheated. and they like to cheat. They'll do whatever they can to keep their stuff. Again, I'm not sure who he's talking about in particular. I guess the problem, the rich people, the big corporations, or whatever. A couple more clips, he says in clip 11.
But what we have not seen before, in our recent public life at least, is politicians just blatantly, repeatedly, baldly, shamelessly lying, making stuff up, calling up them, calling black white.
And so he deals only in facts, he's been saying, in a number of speeches, not just the one on Friday. But he's been making the rounds about Donald Trump's lies, and he has the media's full support on this. All the lies, and he's dealing in facts. This is what he said about the vote in Wisconsin a few years back, clip 12.
In 2012, Democrats won a majority of votes in the state assembly, and somehow Republicans got 2/3 of the seats. It got rigged. The fix is in. I mean, think about that. Who's ever heard of that? You know that's not fair.
So they got cheated in Wisconsin in 2012. The election was rigged. These are times when poor people are being treated badly. It's unfair. You've got racists in control. That was the message. 30 or 40 minute speech on Friday. The politics of division, divide and conquer, coming in with a message that everything's bad. Everything's falling apart. All of these gains, they're being dialed back. And they're cheating you. They're cheating you, the people. And on the same day, you have the president in the White House with a large group of black leaders, young black leaders, and the whole tone of it from start to finish, pretty positive and very, very well received. Niall Ferguson, he had a column that one of our listeners sent to me yesterday. This is in the Sunday Times here in London, just yesterday. America is edging closer to civil war. And he talks in the early part of this article about the doomsday clock, and you might remember this from Mr. Armstrong referring to this doomsday clock that scientists would adjust from year to year based upon what was happening in the world, and he kind of belittles this, which, I don't necessarily appreciate him just kind of mocking the fact that the world is a dangerous and troubled place, but he's a good historian. And we've read some of his books, those of us that put together material for these programs. But he says as far as the division in the United States, I mean, this is something that is alarming. And he refers to the mail bomber from last week, the man arrested, and then the commentators that are getting up saying President Trump owns this. That's a normally sober Washington correspondent, Niall Ferguson says. He owns this, and he talks about all these other shootings, like the one at the baseball field last year, and how that none of them were coming forward saying, Bernie Sanders owns this. And then he brings out the massacre at the synagogue. Ferguson writes here further on that people on both sides of the political divide are using intemperate language is undeniable, even if the left always insists that the other side is worse. That there is a potential for an increase in U.S. political violence seems clear. By European standards, there are terrifying numbers of lethal weapons in private hands. But civil war, I mean, could it happen? He's an academic. He writes in a pretty scholarly way. And typically he rejects these kinds of assessments. that, well, is it really this bad? But the thing of it is, he brings forward Victor Davis Hanson. He has great respect for Victor Davis Hanson. We quote from Hanson quite a lot on this program. Hanson says we're on the brink of a veritable civil war. And Ferguson says when someone like that says a statement like that, we need to pay attention. And he gives a few other examples as well. Further on, he says, history repeatedly shows that zealous and sometimes warring tiny minorities can escalate tensions, nullify opposition, and bully the silenced majority to sanction, or at least not object to, violence. Ferguson says, surely the most noise on the right and on the left are coming from minorities, vocal and noisy, but at least they're minorities. But then he's referring to Victor Davis Hanson, who says, hey, that's a lot of times how these kinds of things get started. It says the most troubling analogy I heard last week was between the 2020 presidential election and the 1860 presidential election. My interlocutor noted that Abraham Lincoln won a four-way race in 1860. And then he goes on and talks about scenarios. You know, what if there's a third-party candidate that comes in? And what if there's an angry, disputed election? I mean, it's not like we haven't had those before. But, I mean, one that leads to violence. Those kinds of things happened in 1860. They happened even during the years of Reconstruction. People, politicians getting killed, gunned down. It's some history that we do need to familiarize ourselves with. But going back to his title, the edging closer to civil war. Is America edging closer to a civil war? That was in the Sunday Times yesterday. Well, we'll take a quick break and then come back and conclude today's show by updating you on the follow-up Bible study we had in downtown London just yesterday. For those that were at the London Personal Appearance Campaign last week, we'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is The Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Just one follow-up thought to that piece, that column by Neil Ferguson in the Sunday Times yesterday. America is edging closer to civil war. Our program on Friday, The Coming Civil War, I think there's something like 1,400 plays on just SoundCloud alone. That doesn't take into account the iTunes downloads and other ways that people can listen to the show. But that was just a fair bit higher than what we typically have. So for whatever reason, that's striking a chord with some over the weekend. I mean, we typically do get a larger audience for the Friday show because it's one that gets listened to through the weekend. But still, if you didn't hear that message or that program, you can hear that one and all of these programs on our websites, thetrumpet.com and the kpcg.fm website. The follow-up Bible study yesterday, following the campaign in London last Sunday and Monday night, we had 21 people, 21 non-members who showed up for the study last night, together with several members and three of our ministers. Brad McDonald gave the message talking about the true church, and I know he also delved into the subject of Sabbath observance. So getting into some of the nuts and bolts of the teachings that we have in God's true church. And as I say, of the 32 that signed up, 21 made it out for the public Bible lecture, and a few others that didn't make it explained or, again, expressed their sorrow for not being able to make it. So Brad McDonald tells me that he feels like there's a nice bit of momentum building, some really warm relations that he and the other ministers have had with these people. They're all interested, so far as we know, to attend another Bible lecture, I think, in a couple of weeks. So we will keep you updated on that. This one here, coming in from one of those attendees yesterday, this was an email, actually, that I got on Saturday. It says here, I attended your talk at the Hilton Hotel in Houston on Sunday last week with my wife. We enjoyed hearing you speak and meeting the delightful members of your staff. It says, although you are under pressure to spread your wings to cities like Glasgow and Belfast, we hope you will find time to organize more such events in London, possibly next time at one of the hotels in close proximity to Heathrow, where numerous business conferences are held. This would be helpful to people flying in specifically for the meeting, such as the elderly gentleman that came from the Isle of Man. So he heard on the radio about our plans to head out to Belfast in late January next year, and just offered his encouragement to come back to London and hopefully closer to Heathrow next time around. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send any and all comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.